We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is Darius Miller.
This is Drew Hardy.
This is Lance Thomas, Tyree Gavin.
Jason Smith.
Anthony Davis of the New Orleans Pelicans.
You're listening to.
And you are listening to In the Know.
In the Know.
The Bourbon Street Shots.
Bourbon Street Shots podcast.
All Pelicans, all the time.
Welcome to the show. The Pelicans just got smacked by the San Antonio Spurs at the end of the quarter. And I, like always, we decided right after then we needed to have a podcast. Michael, what do we need to do about this? We got to start picking like stupid teams to play against, like Cleveland. Can we play against Cleveland every night when we do a podcast?
Or at least Memphis. I mean, yeah, that seems to be the one team in the West we could beat. I believe we're 5-22 now against Western Conference teams, not named the Memphis Grizzlies.
Wow. And the Memphis Grizzlies, they've won 11 of their past 12 games. The one game they lost was to the Pelicans.
That's right. And their coach just won a coach of the month or whatever. Only blemish on his resume.
Yeah. So I guess we get to play spoiler. But despite my doom and gloom about this extremely frustrating last quarter against San Antonio, the Pelicans did have a 2-2 week since we last talked about them. They beat Cleveland and Chicago and lost to Minnesota without Anthony Davis, and then lost tonight to San Antonio. So before we get to the games and we start talking about what we saw and didn't see, I have a little game I wanted to play with you, and I'm springing it on you. You don't know this is coming.
Yay, games!
So it's just buy or sell, and I just want to get your take on each of these three Pelican-related items, okay?
All right.
First one. Buy or sell Anthony Morrow as the focal point for the bench doing mid-range jump shots.
Ugh. I'm trying to think of what my other options could be.
Because, I mean, it's not just – I mean, we saw it a lot in the San Antonio game, but it's been a play they've been running for about a week that I've been paying attention to, where they have Anthony Davis set a down screen. He rolls off, turns at the elbow, catches it on the other side of the paint, usually losing his man by that point, and then he flips the shot up.
Yeah, and I think the secondary option off of that is when teams start adjusting and both men collapse, he'd throw an alley-oop for Davis, which I think we'd all be a lot happier with, but 2 points are 2 points, and you just got to take the shot based on how they play it. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, that second unit, I don't know. I watched a couple of nights ago when Tyreek Evans was the focal point, or they tried to make him the focal point of the second unit on offense. And honestly, I mean, most of the times in that second unit, when AD is off the floor, they are playing with Steemsma and Ajinka. Or there was stretches of, like, Steemsma or Ajinka and Withy, Steemsma, Withy, whatever. they're usually playing those two bigs at the 4 and 5. And it's just funny to watch teams cover those two or actually not cover them. And there's just big men just literally standing in the paint. I'm specifically thinking of the Chicago game. And I really don't know how you make Tyreek the focal point of that second unit when there's just 2 7-footers literally standing there waiting for him. So I guess I don't mind it with the team that we have now. If this team was healthy, I'd hate it.
So you're buying Anthony Morrow, focal point from the mid-range.
I am, yeah.
Okay. All right, so next one for you. In the last game against Chicago, and it was repeated tonight, Jen Hale reported that Tyreek Evans thought that he needed to – he was frustrated that he needed to focus a little more on taking and making the mid-range jumper and working on that, and that Monty Williams wanted him to do more of that as well. So buy or sell Monty not knowing that Tyreek Evans can't shoot a jump shot?
I mean, do I buy or sell that Monty doesn't know? I don't know how to answer your question. I buy the fact that Monty...
All right, let me make it easier so we're not killing Monty here. Buy or sell Tyreek Evans using the mid-range jump shot to free up his driving game?
I mean, long-term, you've got to buy. There's just, again, we get all wrapped up in this regular season, but and it's hard to remember because we're so rarely there, but the playoffs are a totally different game. And as exciting as it is when we see Evans drive into the hole and, you know, making those incredible layups or just getting there at will at times, he's not going to be able to do that against good teams, which are the teams you'll meet in the playoffs, over a 7-game series. They're going to have to at least respect it. I mean, at least to the point that teams started to respect Rondo. It was this myth that Rondo couldn't shoot. He was actually a very good mid-range shooter the last couple of years. And to me, I know that they're totally different body sizes, but that's the type of impact that Evans could have on the game. He could get you a triple-double at any time. He's a guy that could get to the rim at will, but he's going to have to at least bury that mid-range jumper from time to time to open other things up or, you know, maybe just to protect his body. I mean, this is a guy that seems to get hurt every other game at this point, never anything serious, but knickknacks here and there. So a mid-range game would help protect that body a little bit.
Yeah. I don't know if he's ever going to be good enough that I want him taking it, though. That's the problem. Like, you know, there's always that the thing we've heard before is players can always get better at their shooting, but when you're starting at such a low point, it doesn't matter. You have to get a lot better to be able to reach the point you need to be at. So, I don't know.
I mean, so what would your cure be? Just to him just bury his head down and live with whatever results?
I'd put him in the post.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, that's
I mean, so Evans is clever enough on the drive most of the time that he can get where he needs to get. But, you know, if that's not working, put him in the post. If that's not working, there's a reason why this team's got so many guards.
Yeah, no, I'm a huge fan of Tyreek Evans in the post. Been screaming it since, heck, last year when I was looking at his numbers. I still don't know why we don't see more of that. Actually saw it once today against Bellinelli before he got hurt, and it, you know, had really good success. So, I definitely wouldn't mind that at all. But still, I mean, he's got to at least have teams respect that or not go under or play 5 feet off him every single time if we're talking about winning 2, 3, 4 rounds in a playoff series with him as a key player.
All right. Okay, and then my last buy or sell. So Anthony Davis, there's no question he's been pretty amazing over this last stretch, more than even normal. However, there is one thing that I've found interesting, alarming. I want to take your take. Buy or sell Anthony Davis playing more than 41 minutes every game. That's what he's been doing over the last five.
I mean, at this age, I have absolutely no problem with it. Even when we looked back at some of the guys, I remember looking back at KG at 2021, and you know, we were saying that Davis would never match his production because he'll never get those minutes. And, you know, really it was it's something that we're starting to see AD get those kind of minutes now. I don't know if 41, but somewhere between 38 and 41 is fine with me. Maybe not, you know, if they have one of those four games and five nights type of stretches. But, I mean, he's a young guy, and there's so many timeouts, it seems, during a game. And with the way that this team fouls, I mean, those are basically like extra timeouts. So you put him on, you put him on the floor with Steemsma and Adinkra, and there's going to be so many fouls that he's going to be able to catch his breath in those times.
No worries about injuries or anything like that.
I mean, I guess you could say with more time, the possibility comes with more injuries. I don't think any injuries will happen because of tired legs. I guess if I'm making sense here, like the minutes won't contribute to more injuries, but the fact that he is on the court more with nine other grown men who are leaping, jumping, and running, I guess, mm-hmm. gives you a higher probability of injury. But I don't think the minutes themselves will lead to a worn-down body and more injuries, not at the age of 20.
Yeah. I got to say, tonight against San Antonio in the first quarter, when he whacked his hand and he was shaking it and holding it and cradling it, I wanted to vomit. I was like, you've got to be – did he break his hand again? I was – Yeah, my friend was over the other night when Austin Rivers took that hard fall, and he's grabbing his back, and he's, like, squirming on the floor. And he was laughing at me because he thought my face was priceless because I looked like I'd been kicked in the nuts.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, you're a good friend.
Even if you were, the refs probably wouldn't have called a foul on.
It's true. Oh. So. All right, let's get to the games now that I've hit you with some surprise questions. Cleveland, is there anybody on this Cleveland team that you would want?
I was just going to leave it with the question being, is there anybody on this Cleveland team?
No.
Is there anybody that I would want? God.
I mean, like the one player that pops to mind, I think, Deng's not bad, but he's got a big contract. I don't know if I even want... I mean, just... This is such a bad crew. It's so dysfunctional.
Yeah.
And, like, Anthony Bennett, people were talking about after the game, Anthony Bennett had his best game, maybe he'll finally break out. Bennett, like, had a few nice shots, but he also had some of the biggest bonehead plays in the world that game.
Yeah, the beginning of the game was rough. My favorite picture of the week was a Twitter picture where somebody took... You know, the old famous photo of Wilt Chamberlain holding up the piece of paper that says 100 on it.
Mm-hmm.
They put Anthony Bennett's face over his and put up 15. And it's funny because I was going back looking, and Bennett actually scored more points in that game than he had the entire month combined. I mean, this was like a breakout game for him, and yeah, he hit a couple of threes and made a couple layups when the game was basically over, but it was just embarrassing to watch this guy at times. And Kyrie Irving, the fact that there was an argument of which guy would you start a franchise with, him or Anthony Davis, is so laughable.
Oh, it wasn't even an argument. Nobody said Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
They said Kevin Durant, LeBron James, or Kyrie Irving, and Davis wasn't listed.
Yeah, people were drooling at the USA camp and how exciting and funny he is. The other thing I got a lot of on Twitter, people want you to pronounce the guy who got 9 minutes in this game, 3 assists, two rebounds.
For... In that, in the Cleveland game.
Yeah. I don't know what box score you might be looking at, but
so,
his name is Matthew.
Oh, see, but I'm going to nail this one because I actually watched Summer League where he was pretty impressive. So it's Matthew Dellavedova.
Oh, all right.
Sorry, guys. gotta do better than that. One's even like you can look at that one and kind of figure that one
yeah,
out.
Yeah, and old New Orleans. I mean, Henry Sims was here for a cup of coffee. Garrett Jack. I mean, just looking lost on that team after getting a big contract. Deion Waiters, and he's been doing this for a while. He puts up numbers that if you just went to the box score and saw 21 points on 13 shots, and again, he's had a couple games like this lately, you would think, all right, that's a solid player living up to, you know, his potential fourth overall pick. He's starting to play like one. You actually watch him, and there's nothing about him that you like or want on your team. I mean, it's just he's a guy that, you know, again, if you're just looking at the box score, you might think he's a player or someone worth trading for. Or, you know, maybe the Cavs are getting desperate. They could be in the Eric Gordon mix. I would have absolutely no interest whatsoever.
Yeah. So here's the funniest moment in the game was Deion Waiters came in. Probably about 3 minutes later, Tyreke Evans entered the game. And Waiters bodied him up. Evans tried to do one of his, like, spins, and Deion Waiters was, like, all over him and doing really well, and Evans kind of delivered an elbow kind of down low in his gut area and spun around and kicked through the ball out. And next time down the court, Deion was playing next to Jack, and Deion literally ran away from Tyreke Evans, kind of like towards the other side of where Tyreke Evans was coming down the court, and pointed at him and trying to get Jack to take him. It was the funniest thing I've ever seen. And Jack's like, what? And finally Jack ran over and took him because Deion Waiters was not going to bother with Tyreke Evans next time.
Oh, I love it.
I was like, that is like the worst freaking set of teammates in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, again, we always talk about and whatever from the Pelican side, they keep saying they're not looking to move any of their big pieces before February 20th. But you always talk about the type of profile for a team that if you want to unload a player with a big contract, I mean, Cleveland fits it to a T. Their GM straight up getting fired if they don't make the playoffs this season. When you pass up the chance, I mean, think about how loaded this team could be. Not only if they took, like, I'm not saying 50-50, you know, or sorry, 20-20 hindsight. I'm talking about the guys that people were saying they should pick at the time. If they have those guys on this team, I mean, you're talking about a team that would feature, I don't know, you could go any which ways, but maybe a backcourt of Irving and Oladipo with Harrison Barnes and Valanciunas up front, or Andre Drummond, Pasa. I mean, just people that, again, at the time, pundits were projecting them to pick, but they had to go off the board and make all these crazy picks. I mean, this could be in some ways an OKC East, and they just blew every pick. They make this dang trade, and they're doing nothing now with him, and he looks completely lost there. I mean, that's a team that, if there's going to be somebody who makes a panic trade before February 20th, they would be atop my list.
Yeah, but the thing is they really have nothing to offer anymore. I mean, I guess they could throw in picks, but, like, you look at their team and, like, unless you're a team that desperately needs a backup point guard, and Jared Jack, you remember how he played last year, you think he'll return to that if he's not on a dysfunctional team? He might be worth something. Zeller as a backup center? I mean, we're not talking, but Lil Dang, some teams might like, would want him still, but that's a big contract to move. And they're also going to be, you know, in that cognitive dissonance place where we traded for Lil Dang to save our season, so we got to give him a chance to do that. I'd be willing to bet they're not even considering moving him now because he's the guy that they stake their comeback on.
Right.
So, I don't know. That game was just, it was ridiculous to watch. And Anthony Davis, I mean, it was the perfect counter to not making the All-Star game.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. There's multiple games this week where he had more blocks than shots missed.
Yeah.
And I mean, and it's not like he's a guy not taking shots. He's taken recently between 17 and 22 shots per game, and multiple games with more blocks than shots missed. The weird thing, and we'll see this as a trend throughout the week, is you'll continue to see really small minutes for Evans, and regardless of who starts, it looks like Monty is falling back in love with the idea of Greg Stiemsma getting the most minutes at center after some good performances. Mm-hmm. We see Withy not getting on the court anymore, and we continuously begin to see and are starting to see more and more Stiemsma. I had a decent game in this one. Almost put up a double-double if it wasn't for a missed free throw late. Had 9 and 11, 2 blocks. But I don't know. I still don't get it. I mean, I don't think anybody could possibly believe that Stiemsma will be on this team next year. We're too good to tank, not good enough to make the playoffs. I don't really understand Stiemsma playing at this point over Withy, especially when Withy's been playing some solid basketball. At least not, you know, 30, 31 minutes to zero. At least split him up a little bit. But that's a trend we'll start seeing, is Evans, in my opinion, not getting enough minutes, and Stiemsma basically grabbing the lion's share of the center minutes.
Yeah. And, I mean, the weird thing about Withy is, I guess maybe Monty's one of the coaches who thinks you have to put in your dues. And there is some, I mean, like Jimmy Butler. We saw him in the Chicago game. He didn't play really any minutes his first season. He played with the practice squad. He learned what he was supposed to be doing. And he did well enough that the next year, and he showed that over that summer that he would work on his game. And when he came back, Thibodeau started playing him. So maybe Monty has the same sort of feeling about, you know, players who are taken a little lower in the draft, that he can, you know, let them work for a year, prove that they're worthy of the time, and then bring them in. And meanwhile, let's keep the veterans happy. I'm thinking that might be it, but you're right. I mean, I don't, Withy would be starting if I was coaching this team.
Yeah, maybe not starting for me. I do like the idea of Ajinka as like kind of a fake starter. Because, no, I mean, I like that, because a guy like Withy, I think you bring him in either as the starters are getting tired or with the second unit, and he has a little bit more confidence because he's playing well against lesser player. I mean, I think the last thing you want to do to a guy like that is just have him get dominated in the first couple of minutes of a game, pick up two quick fouls. I do kind of like that idea of Ajinka as a fake starter, but yeah, I mean, then I would like at least Withy to start getting some of these minutes. And even more than that, I mean, it's a trend that we continue to see with Ryan Anderson out. The $44 million man just can't get on the court and can't really make the impact. I looked at some of the, if you look at the on-off numbers with Tyreek, when you look at him on the court with Ryan Anderson and off the court, it is unbelievable. I'm talking, I mean, we're an 11% dip at the rim. I mean, even the plus minus, he's minus 117 without Rhino on the court and plus 65 with them. Of course, there's other people in that equation, but I mean, I would just tell people when they get the time, go take a look at Tyreek when he's on the court with Ryan Anderson versus off, and, you know, try to remember that 7-game stretch when he was just tearing it up before Ryan Anderson got hurt. That was the plan for Tyreek for this season, but it's not there for him now, because teams just straight up are not respecting the big men in the second unit, and there's nowhere for him to go.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we had Tyreek's had such an up and down season, and he is just generally a really limited player. But if you can put him in a situation where you are taking advantage of his strengths, which are the ability to drive and kick. He is actually a pretty clever passer when he gets into the paint.
Yep.
I mean, he's a pretty solid player, but you're right. I mean, the bench is Austin Rivers, Jeff Withey, Alex Ajinka, you know, maybe Brian Roberts. I mean, sometimes Morrow's out there, but Morrow, he's fairly limited when he's out on the perimeter. He doesn't get a lot of movement going, and they know that he's not cutting to the basket. So they could just face guard him.
Yeah, I just got to say, I think pretty solid is under. I really think you're looking at something like a top 40 player when he's on the court with spacing. Like, yeah, okay. Yeah, you need to have him there. So I guess he is limited because he can't play or can't be really productive with spacing. But, I mean, seriously, go look. People need to go look at that 7-game stretch between it was on the road trip, I want to say, like the Sacramento game and then when Ryan Anderson got hurt. In Boston, I mean, he was a near triple-double every night. He was a triple-double on two of the nights. He was, I mean, just absolutely fantastic. And again, I mean, he is, when he could get any room whatsoever, I would go way beyond solid. I'm really happy with his game and really even think he's worth that money. But It can't be done with the lineups that Monty's putting him out there with right now. I would actually prefer to see Aminu at the four. When I mean, and this is sad when we're talking about putting Aminu on the court to help space.
Right.
But I mean, when you compare it to having Withey and Steemsma out there, so I think it's going to be really a struggle for Tyreek. There's obviously been the rumors of Luke Babbitt joining the Pelicans, nothing official yet, but we should hear soon. I think that move was made for Tyreek Evans more than absolutely anybody else. If you replace, you know, one of the backup bigs for a couple of minutes a game with Babbitt, if you have Babbitt on the court as opposed to Steemsma, I think you're opening up Tyreek's game. Babbitt doesn't even have to do anything. Just stand in the corner and be a threat, and I think that acquisition alone is going to help Tyreek more than anybody.
Yeah, it could be, as long as they're playing with the power forward position.
Did I ruin the Luke Babbitt podcast? We were going to do a whole separate podcast with just Babbitt news, right?
You did, and you just covered everything Luke Babbitt does well in those few minutes, so there's not really any point in talking about him.
Oh, sorry, no midweek podcast.
Yeah, I don't know. What do you think about the way Dell's just been going overseas to pluck players out who are doing pretty well in their EuroLeague teams? I don't know. Is the Russian league considered a EuroLeague? I guess it's, I've never known. Is that part of Asia or is that part of Europe?
Wow.
What? Let's get into a philosophical discussion about
no,
it.
No, I just...
St. Petersburg is kind of European style, but Moscow is definitely Asiatic.
I think you're going to get more heat for that than any name you've ever mispronounced on this podcast. Our European listeners are going to be furious. I don't know. Actually, our Asian listeners might be even more furious. But I don't know. I mean, we've said this for a long time. If you take out the top, gosh, I don't know, maybe 200, 250 guys in the league, maybe not even that many, but then you go numbers 251 through 1,000 in the entire world, there's not going to be much difference between any of those guys. And yeah. I think Dell's philosophy is the difference probably is I would rather a guy who's been building his confidence and had a big role on a team the last couple of months than, you know, somebody who's been just working out with his buddies or sitting on the end of a bench that, you know, just got cut or, you know, handed over to me like Tyshawn Taylor. So, you know, I kind of get it. They're both Ajinka and Babbitt were really doing well for their teams. They both have tasted the NBA before and, you know, probably hate the fact that they're so far away now and want to get back and have that hunger. I mean, you really want to make somebody hungry, give them something and then take it away.
Right.
And those guys have experienced that. So I get it. And, you know, for the role that Dell needs to fill, I'm really, you know, to me, best case scenario is Luke Babbitt is a stretch four version of Morrow, gives you the occasional game and horrible defense. But again, I think it'll be huge for Tyreek.
Right. So I realize we hadn't done this in any of our podcasts, so I'm going to give you a moment to explain to our listener something. Tyshawn Taylor, Pelicans traded for him, got him from Brooklyn, and immediately cut him. Why did that? What happened there? Did they ever really want Tyshawn Taylor at all?
Oh, not at all. I mean, really quick. I mean, the Nets are going to be paying a substantial amount in tax money this year for how far they are over the new punitive rules.
It's almost like $3 instead of like one for one over the tax. I think they're almost at $3 or $2.50 or something like that.
Yeah, and so I mean the Nets, just by having Tyshawn Taylor at their roster on their roster at the end of the year, it would have cost them more than $3 million. Just Tyshawn and I mean in penalties, not even what they're paying him. So then, you know, they basically look at the Pelicans who are able to trade you know, for a minimum player without really giving anything in return. The reported figure is $1 million. They say to the Pelicans, we'll give you $1 million and Tyshawn Taylor for basically this prospect that isn't really a prospect. He's just a guy that the Pelicans have rights to, that other teams have in the past, that you're allowed to say you gave up something in order to get something. Anyway, the real deal was $1 million and Taylor to the Pelicans. You see why the Nets would do it, because it would be about a $2 million net saving for them. And then the Pelicans take the $1 million. Taylor's owed about $400,000 for the rest of the year. They give it to him. They send him on their way. And, you know, all of a sudden Dell pockets Dell helps pocket a clean $600,000. And then if you follow the money, they needed to buy out Luke Babbitt out of his contract. Mm-hmm. The most that you could pay a team to buy a player out is $500,000. I mean, you just follow the money. Basically, you know, for taking on Tyshawn Taylor and cutting him, the Pelicans get the money that they need to buy out Babbitt's contract and probably even pay a large part, if not all, of his remaining contract for the rest of the year.
Yeah. So I figured I'd throw that out there because there's a lot of confusion about why would they pick up Tyshawn Taylor instead of just, you know, grabbing Pierre Jackson out of the D-League. And, you know, there's other reasons for that, too, which Jason Calmes has written about a bunch of different times where, you know, basically they signed an agreement with Pierre that said, you know, if you're not coming to our team this year, because if he comes now, they have to start the clock on their 2-year rookie contract with him.
Yeah.
So if why do that halfway through the season when you're not even sure you can play him? So next year is a different matter. They still have his rights. They can bring him in. Although, you know, him tweeting about how crazy things are might not be helping his case. The Pelicans, I don't know, would you want to bring him in if he's doing that stuff?
No, I mean, I think Pierre Jackson is just the guy for, I mean, maybe he gets traded before February 20th if the right deal presents itself, but I think that's a conversation for another time. He's a guy that'll either be an asset in the summer or, as Dell has planned all along, our rookie for 2014, essentially. I mean, the Pelicans won't have their pick in all likelihood in 2014. The plan has been, all right, well, then Pierre Jackson will basically be that. And it is pretty funny. I saw a 2013 NBA draft, a redraft article lately, where basically they say, okay, let's imagine we could go back in time knowing what we know now. Where would guys get picked? And they actually had Pierre Jackson at number 16.
Wow.
So, I mean, you know, looking at this draft, let's say the Pelicans give up the 11th or 12th pick. I mean, it's small, but there's still a chance, a small one, but a chance at that, that maybe Pierre Jackson turns out better than whoever Philly takes with our pick this upcoming year in 2014. I mean, it's not beyond the realm of possibility. So, yeah, I mean, it's interesting the moves that Dell's made. It looks like Ajinka is at least a fifth big next year, and Babbitt, it looks like it's a two-year deal, possibly the second year being a team option. And, you know, with Ryan Anderson's injury, he might be gone for the year, and he's also, you know, you also don't want to go through exactly what you went through this year with, well, if Ryan Anderson's out, our whole team falls apart. So not a terrible idea to get a poor man's Ryan Anderson, not only for this year, but for next year as well for insurance.
Yeah. So before we went off on this long tangent, we were talking a Minnesota Timberwolves game.
Ugh, can we?
Do we want to talk about our 2 of 21 shooting from deep and 35% shooting from the field?
I don't think it's worth our time. I think what might be worth our time is Monty Williams was quite candid that Anthony Davis could have played in this game, but, you know, just being the second night of a back-to-back, little precautionary because Anthony Davis was banged up. He decided to sit him in a game that, you know, was probably winnable, but he gave
probably definitely winnable.
Yeah, I mean, if Minnesota would have played the way that they did in this game, yeah, with Davis on the court, they would have definitely won. But either way, I mean, just overall the philosophy. I know neither one of us know the exact extent of Anthony's injuries, but overall, your philosophy with Monty doing that?
Honestly, it annoyed me a little bit. Like, because what is he saving him for? Like, this is an injury that he injured in the game, came back and continued to play, and if he's fine, he should be playing. I mean, it's a dislocated finger. What are you going to do to it that makes it worse than a dislocated finger? And, you know, this team is not trying to tank. You sit out Davis for like a week for that injury if you're trying to tank. You're trying to win games. Play the man when you have a winnable game. And this was a winnable game. I mean, all they had to do was shoot 25% from 3-point instead of 9%, and they won this game.
Yeah. See, I don't know, because I don't know if the game plays out exactly the same. I mean,
yeah, but you get my meaning.
We remember what happened the last time that we went up to Minnesota, right? I mean,
yeah, but they had Petkovic.
So. Yeah. It's probably winnable. I mean, well, not probably. It's a winnable game, but I don't know. I guess without knowing the full extent, when hearing Anthony Davis is banged up again on the second night of a back-to-back, and honestly, that wasn't a game I gave the Pelicans much chance of winning. I'm probably a little bit of a pessimistic at this point. I don't really give them a decent chance of winning many road games without Drew Holiday and Ryan Anderson, to be honest. But specifically that one, after seeing you know, what Minnesota had done to them the last time they went up there, I guess I wasn't totally against it. I guess I have really nothing to say about the offense. Like, absolutely nothing at all that I could say that's positive. No, even
Al-Farouk was trying.
Yeah, he's trying. It looks like, you know, he's starting to tease us a little bit again.
And let's just jump from the Minnesota one, because we're talking Al-Farouk, Chicago.
You want to talk about the hair, don't you?
No, actually, the hair was in the back of my mind. I'm not really a fan. I think I actually kind of like the short afro. But he had some passes in that Chicago game. Where did they come from? I mean, I'm used to him trying to pass the ball and it goes off the other team's leg. And he had some nice passes in that game. In fact, the team as a whole against Chicago, it felt like they were actually making the extra pass on every other play, and I didn't know how to deal with it.
Yeah, I mean, Aminu specifically is playing with some confidence. The Chicago game, I mean, Chicago is as decimated as they are. I mean, really, this team going into the season is essentially without Rose and Deng now, who would either be their best and second best or best and third best players. So as much as we like to complain about injuries, that's a team that's lost a player due to a devastating injury, and then basically were forced to trade away another guy because their season was essentially a lost cause. They're still playing amazing defense, and I don't remember many times when the Pelicans got anything easy in this game. I mean, they had to fight and claw for everything, and yes, some of the passes by Aminu, even Gordon at times, were nice to see. Tyreek, I thought, was able to get into the lane at will, and sometimes he would force up some pretty ugly shots or sometimes a couple of shots that just narrowly missed, but he also was able, you know, to make some nice passes. I remember specifically him driving and getting Steamsma an easy dunk. Also was able to kick out at times. I thought he was the best playmaker in that game, but
yeah, it's 6 assists.
Yeah, that game was impressive, and it's an overall trend. I mean, really, if you take out the fourth quarter against San Antonio, this has been, and not just stats-wise, I'm talking eye test, it's been a better defense these past couple of weeks. You see that rotations are actually being made. You don't see as many of the wide-open threes as usual. This team is still having a problem defending the pick and roll at times, especially when you got a duo as good as Parker and Duncan. But I mean, nobody's saying that this is a top 10 defense, but I don't think it's a bottom 5 defense anymore either.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just this game alone, think Taj Gibson, like the previous triple overtime game, Gibson was going around our big men like they weren't there. They were traffic cones. He used that baseline spin to great effect over and over again. And in this game, I mean, it was really obvious when Ajinka was doing it, because Ajinka actually had some great anticipation on cutting off that play. So he was well prepared for that game. But Steamsma did it once to Gibson. And at one point, Al-Farouk jumped across. They were just burying that one move that Taj had. And it took away his post effectiveness pretty well, and their rotations were really good behind it. So you're right. I was trying to figure out in that game, was it just because Chicago doesn't have very much in the way of speed anymore, or was it they were just playing it better? And it seemed to me like just that alone, the fact that they were obviously prepared for certain moves from certain players and they were countering them as they happened. I mean, that was pretty nice to see.
Yeah, I mean, there's...
Although, DJ Augustin?
Oh, come on, really?
Did I say it right?
That was on purpose, right?
No.
Oh, gosh. All right, go ahead.
I mean, the dude, I remember him in his rookie seasons, I think, dropping like 30 on the Hornets. And he comes into this game. This is a guy who's been cut, what, 3 times in the last 2 years by teams that have no use for him whatsoever. And they weren't good teams. And he comes in and puts up 23, and a couple times, like, drives into the teeth of defense, puts in these awesome layups or kicks out. What is that?
I mean, I would say it's a fluke, but it's really not. He's been doing that for the last couple of weeks. He essentially leads that team in scoring pretty much every night. So
it kind of reminds me in some ways of Darren Collison when he took over after CP3 went down.
Yeah, and I mean, we see this. We saw this with Nate Robinson with the Bulls last year,
Vegas,
where you just kind of, Thibodeau tells everybody play your defense. Whatever guard comes in there, he just says, you know, you're going to have free reign. And, you know, that just boosts a confidence. I mean, honestly, if you're in the NBA at this point, you could score. And there could be other parts.
If you're a guard.
Yeah, exactly. You might not be able to score efficiently. There's other parts of your games that are not good. But honestly, if you gotten to this point, you've made tens of thousands of shots. in your lifetime. But yeah, this wasn't a fluke. I mean, in Augustine's last 10 games, 19 points, 16 points, 19 points, 27, 27, 7. That was his only in single figures. 28, 19, 15, and 23. I mean, he's a guy who, you know, who has been scoring in that role that Thibodeau obviously sets aside for his lead guards. So I wasn't as bothered by that. And I was actually happy. The guy I was worried about that would come out of nowhere, was Tony Snell. He actually had a bit of a hot stretch coming into this game, but I think the biggest takeaway from this game for me was, I mean, again, I want so bad for Eric Gordon to do well, either because, you know, he's going to be on this team and I want the players on this team to do well, or to raise his trade value. He gets out.
Are you going to kill him for this game?
Well, no. I mean, he gets out and he gets the first seven points
of the game, right?
The first 7 points of the game, 9 minutes in, you know, left in the first quarter, he has 7 points. He has two the rest of the game, and it was really, I mean, Jimmy Butler is a good defender, but Gordon couldn't get absolutely anything done against him in this game, and it's just, you know, Holiday's out now, Ryan Anderson's obviously out. I know Gordon isn't, you know, a number one option kind of guy, but he's getting paid by one. And, you know, you've said, and other people have said, well, if he was on a team where he was asked to do more and, you know, he wasn't just one out of five scorers or whatever, that he could be putting up 20, 25 points a game. Let's say he went to a team like the Bobcats. I'm honestly not so sure of that. I think he might just be a complimentary piece, you know, at this point. And this was a game where they, you know, another team put their best defender on him. He was the best option for the Pelicans on the perimeter and with creating. And he gets out to that hot start, really doesn't show up for the next 47, or, you know, whatever it is, 45 minutes. And I really don't buy that argument that it's just, and we even saw an ESPN article about it this week where, you know, Gordon basically just said, people expect me to put up 20, 25, but they don't understand that's not how this system works. You know, we share the ball. I don't know if I could really, really buy that argument anymore. If there's any time when he could step up and team needs him to score 25, 30 points a night, it's now. And I don't think he's capable of it.
In this game, I actually, I felt like in the second half, he was actually getting the shots he wanted for a while. Like, he probably had like 5 or 6 of them that were the shots he wanted to take. They just didn't go down. And that happens sometimes. I was annoyed by the fact he only had 9 points, but, you know, I didn't think he was playing. He wasn't dogging it. He was working. He was getting the shots he needed. He wasn't dribbling the ball off his own ankle. So I wasn't going to kill him for this game.
Yeah.
But you're right. You're right. I mean, he's got to get it done or he's not worth his contract. And that's the problem when you sign a max contract.
Right.
You're going to end up being murdered by your own fans.
Yeah. I mean, he's not a bad player, but there's no, it's much easier to make the argument that he's a bad player than make the argument that he's a $15 million player. Neither of those statements are true, but he's closer to the former than the latter. And I haven't been able to dive into all the numbers yet. I know I've seen some people on Twitter have gone into the last 5 games or 7 games on the defensive rating, and it's impressive. But again, just using the eye test, I really see a change in the defense, and I think it's, you know, as much as the rotations, but it seems to me like this team is just a little bit more careful with the ball as of late. I would like to see what our turnover percentage is recently, and I just I don't see the team giving up the, you know, the easy baskets anymore, the fast break points. I think that's part of it. It starts on that end as well.
Until the fourth quarter tonight, when Parker was just wearing out the whole team and they couldn't deal with him anymore in the fourth quarter. Up until that point, I felt like the Pelicans' pick and roll defense. I mean, I can't tell you the number of times early in the season where it was a simple pick and roll. Both guys would hedge out to the guard who was going baseline, and the big man would lumber right to the center to catch a bounce pass, and nobody was in the neighborhood.
Yeah, and
I haven't seen that a lot. I saw once during the Chicago game, once during the Cleveland game, and then tonight against San Antonio, I saw it like five times in the fourth quarter. But before that, we didn't see it that much.
And I got to – no, I don't want people to misunderstand this because – I feel like people will say that it's all Monty's fault. I don't think tonight's loss was all Monty's fault. I think Popovich made a move that Monty didn't anticipate or wasn't quick enough to react to. Or to me, what's a scarier thought is that Monty actually saw it and didn't play the move right. But essentially, what happened to create all that space on the pick and roll is Popovich put Bonner in at the end of the game.
Yeah.
And that essentially made Anthony Davis stay on Bonner, not be able to protect the rim, and Parker and Duncan just had a pick and roll on the left side. And there's literally nobody else there, and it was just, I mean, it was two-on-two basketball, and those two are going to kill who was on them, Robertson, Steemsma.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, you're putting the game on the line saying, yeah, let's play two-on-two basketball with Robertson, Steemsma against Parker and Duncan. That's just insane. I mean, with hindsight, but even with the ability to think of it at the time, to me, the clear answer is you put Davis on Duncan, and then you play Aminu at the four to cover Bonner. I mean, what's Bonner going to do? Post him up?
Right.
And I don't know what's scarier to me. The fact that it happened too quickly, because people really need to try out coaching. I mean, things, they seem to happen so slow when you're sitting at home. When you are actually coaching, things are happening so fast. You've got 30 things going on. It's really hard to think as clear as you and I can at home. So I want to hope it's that. But if it's old school Monty going, well, he's got two bigs out there, so I'm going to have two bigs out there, that scares me way more than, you know, Monty just got caught up in too many things and was surprised by something, and before he knew it, it was too late. But that was the clear mistake tonight, and I'm not going to blame it all on Monty because Anthony Davis missed shots he doesn't normally miss. He got super nervous. I mean, how many times have you just seen a ball go right through his hands or him bobble? I mean, it was nerves, or I don't know what.
There was a ton of just dropped bad passes. I mean, the starting five combined for 13 turnovers. And like you said, this team hasn't been doing that recently. So, you know, it was kind of weird watching that game. And the thing that actually annoyed me even more than the fourth quarter where suddenly they burst out on us, it seemed to me like at one point the Pelicans just kind of said, we got this, and relaxed. And suddenly San Antonio was bombing three-pointers, and they weren't getting out on them. And I was like, really, you guys think you're good enough that you're up 10 to the San Antonio Spurs and you can just stop trying your hardest? That bothered me a little bit.
Again, I mean, this is – It's impossible to measure, so it's so hard for me. I mean, unless a player does a Dion Waiters and just doesn't get back on defense or just stands and pouts or walks around the court like Anthony Bennett, it's so hard for me to say they're not trying.
Poor Cleveland.
Oh, I mean, there's gifts out there of Anthony Bennett setting pick and rolls and just walking. Like, it's bad, but yeah, I mean, it's so hard. the narrative always seems to be when a team loses that they weren't trying. Like, you never hear that, well, not never, but you almost never hear that narrative when a team wins. And I don't believe that the causation is as high as everybody's saying. I mean,
don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that they weren't trying for a long stretch, but it seemed like for like a couple of minutes, they felt like they weren't going to be able to be caught. And in that minute, San Antonio buried 3 3-pointers.
Yeah, no.
Wide open looks.
To me, the stretch was that the Pelicans were up 12, and, you know, when Tony Parker is that dominant, you have no answer for him. When he's that dominant, you have got to kill them every minute he is out of the game. Like, you can't even play them to a draw, because when Tony Parker's on the court, you know that he's going to shred you. And, you know, 9:45 left to go in the fourth. The Pelicans are up 12. San Antonio calls timeout. Popovich is going to leave Parker on the bench for another 2-3 minutes. And Patty Mills just comes and, you know, 5 quick points. Then Danny Green buries a 3. All of a sudden, the lead's down to 4, and now Parker's coming back in. You know, at that point, I mean, whether you're an optimist or a pessimist, whatever, you probably know at that point which way the game is heading. And you're right, that was a huge part of the game. And again, if you go back and you watch the tape of that stretch, literally every single time San Antonio wanted to get a shot, they would just run a pick and roll with Steam's man, forcing him to switch or edge or come out or whatever. And it's, you know, I applaud Monty on so many things, but it just seems like he's always reactionary, and he's just always a little too old school with sticking to the position. I mean, to me, this is a game where you've got to go Aminu and Davis for a large stretch, because really, Davis could cover whoever the big is, and then, you know, or Aminu on Bonner, or Aminu on Dia. Like, are you really that worried that he's going to get exposed? I do think there, you know, there's some questioning of Monty here, and that's not even putting into the factor that Rivers was far better than Roberts tonight, and Morrow was on fire. Yet neither of them were in when the game actually mattered down the stretch.
Yeah. And actually, I felt that Monty did the right thing with taking Morrow out, because they were running him primarily, like I said, like primary scorer. They were running all kinds of plays for him. But the San Antonio Spurs did switch up their defense on him, and they started making it a lot harder for him to take those catches. They were switching on him a lot more frequently. So I think he made the right decision with Morrow. I don't think he made the right decision with Rivers, because as much as Brian Roberts was actually able to run after Tony Parker, he wasn't actually ever going to be physical enough to stop any of those shots. And I felt Rivers was doing a better job with Parker than Roberts. But we've said that a million times before.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny looking at Rivers' end of game stat line, and actually, his stats have kind of got weighted as of late. He's been taking a lot of these half-court heaves, so those show up in the box scores. I mean, the only 3 he missed tonight was basically a 40-footer. But I really felt like this was one of the better Rivers games I had seen on both ends of the court. And, I guess most coaches are going to play their starters, and it makes sense, but it's different sitting Drew Holiday down for the better player on a night than Brian Roberts. I mean,
right. You
could really make an argument for either of those guys as the starter. If Rivers is clearly having the better game on both sides of the court, I think you got to leave him in.
Right. Okay, so that's all our game. Do you have anything else you want to talk about in that San Antonio game?
I think people got to take the positives. It's, you know, the fourth quarter was rough, but it doesn't make the first 3 quarters any less valuable. There's still a lot of things that could be taken out of those quarters. And I guess just to mention that Tyreke Evans did go down with a bit of a rib injury. It was reported that he might return in the game. He never did, but at least, you know, them reporting that makes it seem like we should be seeing him. He won't be out for a couple of games.
Right, and I guess during that game, they announced Jason Smith was done for the season.
Of course. I mean, I guess my...
Is that a surprise to you?
No, I mean, it's not. The only thing that's frustrating to me is that, like, I don't know how many other teams have problems with diagnosing stuff. It always seems like something gets diagnosed one way, and then, oh, the player complained of something, they went back and checked, and this was wrong too. I don't know. Maybe it's just because I don't follow the other 29 teams as closely, but just seems like it happens more to us than any other team. But my only thing coming out of it is, you know, Jason Smith's obviously a free agent. I don't know if this team needs him on the court, but I still think they're going to make an effort to re-sign him. And I wouldn't say that the injury is a blessing in disguise, but I really don't see him getting more than $2.5 to $3 million on the open market offer-wise.
And right, because of his knee.
Yeah, and I think he's a guy that comes back at a pretty small price. And if he could play, like we've said, 60, 70 games a year for 12 to 16 minutes with the energy that we love that he plays with, I mean, he'll be of value once again.
Yeah. It is kind of crappy to say this, but I was actually legitimately concerned that we would end up having to pay him like a $5 million a year contract. When he started starting, he was playing fairly well. He was getting 22 minutes and doing pretty decent, had a nice block percentage. I just felt like some team might come and try to grab him. And I never had a feeling that Jason Smith was going to run for the money. I was pretty much certain in my mind that just the way person he is, that, you know, some team was going to say, well, this is our third big man, so let's go ahead and put $4 or $5 million in, because that's pretty good for a good third big man. And then he would come back to the Pelicans, and we'd end up having him on the books for $5 million, which was really going to cramp us. So it's kind of crappy, but Jason, I'm happy that you're not going to make as much money as you were.
Yeah, I was never really. I mean, you look at guys with similar type of profiles I mean, it's still not a type of guy that even gets the mid-level in free agency. I mean, I think he might be a mini mid-level type of guy, even if he was healthy, but wasn't too worried about more than that. Wish him well. He was never the same since you coughed in his ear. I think you've got to take some blame for it.
That's right. I broke his hearing, and that's caused, you know, balance issues.
Yeah.
That's caused all the root of all those other issues. So anyways, games coming up. Wednesday, it's at home versus Atlanta. Friday, at home versus Minnesota. Sunday, we're in Brooklyn for the start of a three-game road trip through some pretty lousy teams. Which team you want to talk about, Atlanta or Minnesota?
I'm really interested in Atlanta. I mean, I'm interested in a couple of these teams where I really can't figure out how they're doing it. And this, you know, these are the teams where the people who, I mean, we all make arguments. The people who don't like Monty are going to reach for absolutely any argument that they can make. And people who like him will reach for any defense. But, I mean, the interesting ones to me are, you know, if we keep playing these cards of the fact that the team is injury prone as a reason why they're not playing well, you look at a team like Atlanta and, I mean, really, without Horford, this is a team that I wouldn't have been, you know, very impressed with on paper at all. But yet, they keep winning, and they're doing it, I mean, kind of the San Antonio way. Millsap plays 33 minutes, Teague 32, Korver 34, but, like, nobody in the high 30s. And then they just have a bunch of guys coming through contributing guys like Mike Scott, who most people probably don't even know, but
from Virginia.
Yeah, but I mean, could be a guy that that's sought after a pretty respectable season this year. They just they kind of, you know, they've done it with a bunch of guys just playing small roles. And even though, I mean, I guess they have an all-star this year in Millsap, but they don't have anybody really on their roster that you're going to put on the marquee to sell tickets. And, you know, they go out there, they compete every night, they win games that, you know, people think they should have no business winning. They just play smart basketball. I mean, they have the second highest three-point rate in the NBA. They do it, you know, a lot of the ways that the smart analytic people say you go out and win games. They have a bit of the Spurs model with the threes. They also don't really try to grab offensive boards. They just get back on defense. Nothing fantastic defensively, but they just do enough to win. So it's a team that, you know, to me is really intriguing because on paper, and if you tell me they lost Horford, and even when they did lose Horford, I thought, boom, they're out of the playoff hunt. You know, how bad do they get and how far up do they go in the lottery? And that's not the case. This is probably the 3 or 4 seed out east.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and you brought it up. Like, their three-point shooting, I mean, other than Korver, they don't have anybody on this team that you're going to be terrified that he's taking a three-pointer. Pretty much they're all average, league average, or slightly better than league average. But there are 10 players on this team who are averaging more than 2 attempts per game from three-point land. 10 players. I mean, the Pelicans have some incredibly good three-point shooters. And if they shoot 2 in a game, I mean, the world must be coming to an end. And, I mean, that's just, they have a coach who came in and has bought into, well, you know, if we don't have a team that's going to make it to the free throw line, like, insane levels, bombs away. That's where you get your cheap points.
Yeah, and Teague is shooting horribly from there. I mean, by far his worst of the year, and they're still, you know, they're still doing well back there.
Yep. I mean, Millsap is league average. Damari Carroll is, did you ever think Damari Carroll would be a league average three-point shooter?
I didn't, but my wife did. Again, her favorite player in the NBA by far. That was a nice little bargain contract they got.
Yeah, I mean, Lou Williams is league average. Shelvin Max, league average. Cartier Martin was above league average. I mean, even Pero Antic, their center, and I probably slaughtered that name too. I mean, he's shooting league average for three-pointers and probably very high for centers. So, I mean, it's an interesting team. So, and don't forget, they also have Gustavo Ayon.
Gustavo! Yep.
You know, he's going to dominate us. He's going to pass us to death.
Yeah, he hasn't. I mean, he hasn't been playing.
He hasn't been playing that much.
Elton
Brand's got his minutes.
But yeah, I mean, this just feels to me like one of those teams that, you know, I've watched them a couple times. Pelicans haven't played them, but they feel like they're one of those teams that when you lose to them after the game, you're just going, how? What? It didn't even feel like we were getting beat or it was a lot. Like, you know, it's absolutely nothing flashy. There's not going to be anybody like we felt like with Tony Parker tonight, who just absolutely killed you and you had no answer for. But, you know, yeah, I mean, if they're shooting 37% behind the three-point line, I mean,
really, on 25 attempts.
Yeah, I mean, that's like shooting 51% from 2. On those, or actually, it's higher than, wow, my math's bad. Like a little over 55% from 2 on those same number of attempts. So, yeah, I mean, it's something where they just beat you, it looks like, and from what I've seen by playing just a tad bit smarter than you. And honestly, teams like that scare me, you know, with the Pelicans, because if there's one thing I could bank on, it's that the Pelicans probably will not outsmart most opponents.
Wow. So you're betting on a Pelican loss to Atlanta?
No, after all that, Pelicans win by four.
By four because they're at home.
Yeah, I think the San Antonio loss is really gonna leave a bad taste in their mouth after blowing it. I don't think we see another AD performance like this. I think he goes out and just terrorizes the Hawks. So I see a close Pelicans win, but I think Pelicans fans will come out of this game respecting or even getting to know a couple of guys on the Hawks they didn't know before.
All right. So the team I'm going to pick, I'm not going to talk about Minnesota because we just played Minnesota recently. I think we have a perfectly good chance of beating them because Petkovic isn't there. And other than Love, the rest of their team is not particularly good at scoring. But I'm going to talk Brooklyn Nets instead. They are on a bit of a run. They were terrible for a long time, and now people are shocked that suddenly they're playing pretty well. I'm not sure why, because their team's actually getting healthy. But essentially, Joe Johnson became an all-star again this season with a 14.7 PER. And I'm not in terror of anybody on this team. I have a pretty firm feeling the Pelicans are going to beat them. But I just want to talk about them because explain to me how the hell Joe Johnson, who's averaging 15.6 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, half a steal per game, and he's shooting 44% from the floor, is an all-star. Does it make any sense to you?
He made game winners, which to me is stupid. Because yeah, game winners. I mean, that takes some cojones that he's hit. I think 3 or 4 this year, and a couple of them have been really spectacular. But honestly, if he plays better during the course of the game, he doesn't have to hit game winners. I mean, this always gets me about the quarterbacks who are able to come back in the fourth quarter. I don't know. I mean, I kind of like the quarterbacks who just go out there and dominate from the beginning and don't have to. But yeah, I think a combination of being in a relatively big market in, making a couple of plays at the end of the games, having a name. But I mean, people say Lance Stephenson. I think the list goes way further. I think there's 4 or 5 guys, even in the putrid East, that deserve the spot over Johnson.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just ridiculous. Darren Williams, just on this team, and Darren Williams has struggled for part of the season. He's played better than Joe Johnson has. And that's not saying much because Darren Williams is pretty bad. So, I don't know. As far as this matchup, the one guy who I think still has the potential to just completely torment the Pelicans is going to be Paul Pierce. Aminu is a fine defender, but one of Pierce's best attributes is to get the ball at the mid-post and just attack and then take the bump and hit a shot. And if there's anything a Pelicans players, especially big men, like to do, they like to bump other players and foul them. So Pierce could be in for a big night, one of those nights where he gets like a dozen free throws and you're wondering why is he going to the line so much? He doesn't do this normally. Well, it could happen. But in the end, I'm going to give the win to Brooklyn, but only by 2 points. And that's because we're in Brooklyn. And that's the only reason.
Yeah.
What about you? You think they can take Brooklyn?
I really do. I don't know what Brooklyn does to contain Anthony Davis. And I mean, last year when Anthony Davis was 15, 20 pounds lighter and, not really nearly as skilled as he is now. I mean, I remember on that game winner against Boston, he just went up and over Kevin Garnett with ease and got the put back. The Pelicans actually beat Boston both times last year. I really think this is, put the names aside and just talk about who they are as players right now. This is a huge mismatch for the Pelicans. I'm actually more afraid of Andre Blotch, to be honest.
Yeah, well, I wasn't worrying about Kevin Garnett, that's for sure.
Yeah. And then, I mean, at the point guard position, I mean, it's funny. That's the position that I really worry about when the Pelicans go against a dominant point guard. I have no idea what Brian Roberts is going to do to slow him, but I almost hope that that Deron Williams sees Roberts in front of him and tries to dominate the game, because I don't really have any fear of Williams whatsoever. I'm with you. I think Paul Pierce is the guy I'm more afraid of, but I really like the way Aminu's been playing both man-to-man defense lately, and you know, even his rotations have been a little bit more crisp. I really think that this is a game where you look at the mismatches, and I think the Pelicans have a huge one. I really don't think Brooklyn has any clear mismatches. So, yeah, I would say New Orleans again.
Okay. One thing I forgot to mention about Aminu. Have you noticed his new crossover?
Are you talking about a vehicle or like...
No, he actually has a crossover on the perimeter that has been freeing him up against defenders every so often. That first defender, he gives him enough separation that he can drive. And that's not something he really had before, and he's been breaking out the last few games. So keep an eye on it. He doesn't do it very often. I think against San Antonio, he broke it out twice. But it gave him plenty of room to move to the basket.
Yeah, I feel like a couple of little things. I mean, there was a little stretch there where he would have a post-up or two per game, and mm-hmm. he was doing well on those. It seems like when people run out on him, which I still have no idea why, if you kick it out to Tyreek, that anybody would run out, but I think it's probably just instinct before they realize who he is. He's actually able to put the ball on the floor, and I think it seems like he has a much softer finish at the rim than he used to. So I there's small improvements there. It's just, it's still that frustration, because I just don't think, if a guy's been with your team for this long, that you could re-sign him for multiple years and essentially tell him that he's going to be a backup. I think you've got to make a decision on whether he's a starter or not. If you don't think he's a starter, you let him go, because you can't just continue to pay backups, huge amount of money. And I don't know. It's just, it's one of the most frustrating things. He's not completely inept. It would almost be better if he was completely inept, like a Julian Wright. It would be easy to just let him go. It's when you start to see the flashes of potential that makes it hard to do. But I just don't know how long you wait around, especially if really you're going to have to make a decision this summer.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know either. All right, so I think that's it. Got anything else you want to talk about?
No, I guess it just might have the turn of, or not the return, but the acquisition of Luke Babbitt. We're also probably going to get the naming rights soon. Obviously, the rumors are talking about the Smoothie King Center or something to that effect. Trade deadline, I'm sure we'll do a podcast before then, but expect plenty of rumors just around the NBA in general over the next 17 days. And, All-Star Weekend going to be coming up soon. Still a great thing to have in New Orleans. It's a shame that the team didn't live up to its potential this year or stay healthy, but still a lot to be excited about.
Yep.
With that coming and, Anthony Davis playing so well. Hopefully, my prediction is at some point this week, I'm guessing Wednesday or Thursday, we hear that he is named to the All-Star squad in the place of Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's an 80% chance. I think the only guy who has a real shot at possibly taking the spot, and that's more because they're going to think we got to replace a guard with a guard, I could see Goran Dragic taking that spot. But I feel it's more like a 70-80% chance that Davis will be
guarded. Yeah, I completely agree. And just guard with the guard doesn't really make sense, because then you would have six guards and six forwards. You wouldn't really – I mean, and think about how many similar players to Dragic. I mean, you already have, Chris Paul, Steph Curry, Damian Lillard, Tony Parker. You already have essentially enough point guards. But, I mean, Dragic deserves – if Chris Paul has to sit out the game, I definitely think Dragic takes his place. And it's funny. I mean, a guy that when people were analyzing the initial Chris Paul trade – seemed like just a throw-in guy, or just somebody that was being added to the trade, that really the big prizes were Lamar Odom and Pau Gasol. But Dragic, outside of Chris Paul, obviously, has turned out to be far and away the best player out of that Lakers trade that almost went down. So, I expect Davis. Usually, if a player is definitely going to be out 5 to 6 days, it takes the replacement to be announced. It might take a little longer because Adam Silver is obviously making a transition, but there's just no way coming in as the new commish, a guy who obviously understands business, that, I mean, you're not going to pick another big over Davis. You're not going to pick Cousins I would say if the game was in Sacramento, maybe you pick Cousins. If the game's in a neutral area, you probably pick Davis 8 out of 10 times. With the game being in New Orleans, you got to pick Anthony Davis as the replacement. I think it's a pretty much a lock. And I just want to say that people are saying, oh, it's an asterisk, or it's not a real all-star berth. The asterisk should be on Kobe Bryant, not Anthony Davis.
Right.
Because that's the guy who got in via sham, a stupid vote with people in China and Los Angeles probably accounting for 80% of the vote, and obviously didn't deserve it. Anthony Davis getting in this way, it shouldn't be an asterisk. If they picked 12 players, if the smart people picked 12 players, he would have gotten in every single time. It's no asterisks. There's no shame in going in this way. He's an all-star, and, I don't think there's even any debate about it.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So thanks for everyone listening to In the Know, and we'll be back at the end of the week.
With the wins.
Introducing Guinness Nitro Cold Brew Coffee Beer, blending the smooth, creamy nitro taste of Guinness with hints of coffee, chocolate, and caramel. Guinness Nitro Cold Brew Coffee Beer, your new favorite part of the day. Look for it where Guinness is sold. Must be 21 and over to purchase. Please enjoy responsibly. Diageo Beer Company, New York, New York.